I didn't want her leaving the church too. The only announcement I have is the monthly board meeting will take place this afternoon after class. Oh, and if for any reason we have to cancel class and your name isn't on the list, you can get with John, get your name on the list if you want to be called. If you don't want to be called, fine. Show up here, nobody's here. But this would probably be in case of sickness or, on my part, or really nasty weather. Okay? All right. Let's go. All right. We're on page 14 of your notes, which you should have picked up at the door. If you don't have them, raise your hand, and the deacon in the jump seat will get them for you. All right, Romans chapter 8, verse 18. The section preceding this, the section preceding this deals with the reality that believers in time, which is to be expected, because it's true of all humans. I don't care how insulated they are through wealth and other factors, suffer. Suffering is a part of the human experience, but our sufferings as believers, if we do what we need to do, our sufferings are the ones that occur in connection with our commitment to the plan of God. People who are not committed to the plan of God, they don't necessarily share those kind of sufferings. They're not persecuted, for instance. They might be harassed by people for various reasons, but they're not persecuted. Our sufferings are sanctified. They are sufferings that are to be expected. We dealt with particulars that God will not drop on you anything you can't handle according to your spiritual level of growth and orientation. And we know from the Word of God that some believers underwent some big, heavy-duty suffering, probably greater than any of us here can testify to. You want me to tell you what they were? Driven from their homes, living out in caves, intertestament period, thrown into a Roman Colosseum and wild animals attacking them. Had that happened to you yet? That type of persecution, that level of suffering. You haven't been dispossessed, I don't believe. You haven't been driven from your home. Not to minimize our sufferings. I'm not trying to do that. We aren't asking for anything. We just recognize that there are these things that we're going to suffer. One of the things I tell new believers to doctrine, expect opposition. You don't go looking for it, but it just somehow we, when we get with God and His plan, you become the target for antagonism from your past friends and associates, family in particular. They resent it. It doesn't make them look good. It's not because you're trying to rub it in their face. It's just you found something great, and this is what you're doing. And so you come under a certain amount of attack from them. I had it happen when I was young, and I weathered it. I weathered it. God first, and then everyone else down the ladder. I weathered it. And I've weathered some persecution from a variety of sources since I became a pastor teacher here at Maranatha Church. From members I've labored over and helped spiritually. But I can chalk that up to SG3. So suffering is a part of the Christian life, and we continue with the topic and another observation with regard to it, which I entitled No Comparison. This is the frame of reference for the Apostle Paul, and should be the frame of reference for anyone who is informed and understand that God uses the, quote, bad things that happen to us, and he works them for good. And one of the things, if you didn't have any suffering, none at all, it's unthinkable. But if you had no sufferings, you'd be a spoiled brat. You would not be a good Christian. It helps us with regard to our dealing with our sin nature and other factors that we come under various adversities. And each of us, positive and on doctrine, it's tailor-made for each of us. It's not just happenstance. It's not an accident. It is absolutely designed. God foresaw it, and puts you and I through our own allotment of sufferings. And if we are suffering for the cause of Christ, Bible doctrine, then those are the most glorious kinds, because they translate into esteem before God forever. For I consider, as a word we've seen before in a different way, logizomai, where we had it credit, the crediting of righteousness. For I consider that the sufferings, the word suffering is the noun with a definite article, pathema, are not worthy. The strong negative uk and the word worthy. Adjective, nominative, neuter, plural. I got a bottle of wine with this name on the front of it, and I thought, I know that Greek word. What is it? And I couldn't get it. Axios. Worthy. Axios. For I consider that the sufferings of the present time are not worthy to be compared. Present time is kaios with the adverb the now time. The present time. Are not to be compared. Preposition pros with a definite article, the present active participle, mellow, be about. But we have to translate and make some sense in English. Be about the glory, doxa, glory, to be revealed. Aorist passive indicative, apokalupto, to reveal something to us. Now there's your observation. There's no comparison. Whatever suffering an individual believer goes through, it's not to be compared to the glory and the blessedness of the afterlife. When all those things are behind us forever, and the only thing we have to show for it is the SG3 we got out of it as a result, including, hopefully, and up to the ultimate category of SG3, those who are worthy to gain the prize. In our study of the ultimate reward, the crown, there is another way to classify it. Paul said he was willing to suffer the loss of all things, if necessary. You don't go out and get rid of stuff to show off. He said he was willing to suffer the loss of all things. That would include possessions. That would include anything you could name, up to and including his life, which eventually he laid down his life. I don't know if they cut him a deal that he could walk. Probably, if he just denied the truth and quit this and all the rest, well, he wasn't about that. And so in 68 AD, Nero had him executed. So he said that he was willing to suffer the loss of all things that he might win Christ. Win Christ? That can't be salvation. He had that from right after the Damascus Road event. Win Christ or gain Christ. What? That means if you step into that elite circle, it's because when it was all over, when it's all said and done, either your death or the rapture, and you get the crown, you get the prize, you will have won Christ and you'll be in that elite category. Like any, take a real prosperous society, maybe even a little bit fairy tale, imaginative. Everybody's happy. Such a society doesn't exist. There's no crime. There's no, none of it. Everything. But you work your way up the ladder, and that's those people at the top of the top. That's when Christ. You're in that circle. And all the other Christians, all the other believers outside that circle, they're not in that circle. But since we don't have any STAs on either side, nobody will resent or be jealous. And those that win Christ won't lord it over others. Because the law of love will reign supreme. We won't need faith. We won't need hope. We'll have it. If you hope for something, name it. Well, when you get it, you no longer hope for it. That's a contradiction. You don't hope for the things you came in possession. If you hope for your right opposite number and you get your right opposite number, then you're no longer hoping that you'd find right man, right woman. You got it. So you got my point. If you hope for a new car, when you get it, you don't hope for it anymore. Hope and faith are for down here. Of these three, faith, hope, and love, the greatest is love because one, it will be the relationship between all of us in the afterlife. Agape love. And so, those who are at the top of the rewards category won't look down on the rest of them, and those who are below them will not resent them. No STAs. And those that didn't get it aren't going to go around kicking themselves forever. They will have a bad experience at the Bema seat. That will be a bad experience in a resurrection body, and it's the only one I can think of that I can name right now. They will step back in utter shame. Imagine a negative believer being raptured and appear before the Bema seat and suddenly is downloaded with the entire plan and understanding of God and his plan. And they can look at themselves as believers in time who are flops. And when Christ appears and is before them, they will be in utter shame during the event. On the other hand, you'll have these real vocal individuals who got their crown, and they will be high-fiving and celebrating like you can't even imagine. They're expected to, you use the expression, let their hair down and celebrate. And we will celebrate with great exultation, those of us who qualify for the ultimate reward. Now, all these other believers, any SG3 they've generated, they'll get that too. God is not unfaithful. Anyone who spent years applying, building up their SG3 account, and then go south spiritually and don't recover, they'll still get their SG3. That's in Hebrews 6. God is not so unfaithful as to forget your divine good production. So you, here at Maranatha Church, know what it takes to produce divine good. You know what you're supposed to do when you suffer. I have seen believers that had suffered extreme, positive believers, suffered extreme things and had a real good attitude. It's your mindset. It's a decision. You know, it's like when you're under something, you make a decision. Oh, I'm going to run under fear. You might not say it that way, but I'm going to be afraid. Or you can make a decision. I'm going to stop that. I'm going to get myself in fellowship. I'm going to offer up some prayers, and I'm going to ask God for strength, and keep the scripture in front of me, so I'm not afraid of whatever it is. What I like to call, there's the little tests, the tiny ones, the nuisances. I call that the charge of the mosquito. And the big tests, way on the other extreme, and there's everything in between, the big test is the charge of the elephant. Just to use an illustration. One, in verses 18 through 25, Paul encourages believers with respect to their sufferings in time. Paul was a supreme example before believers of suffering. In fact, he was told up front that he was going to be an example of suffering, above and beyond others. Oh, I think I'll join up with that one. But he was positive, and he did. The kinds of things this man suffered over the course of his ministry. He lists them in Corinthians and other things. I'll give you one example. He was in a shipwreck. They were taking him to Rome. The ship broke up in the ocean, and the ocean was not calm. He spent 3 days holding on to a piece of wood before he got to the shore. That's just one example. In one place, at Philippi, they took him and his assistant, Silas, and they beat him and put him in chains and stuck him in a prison. And that story is found with regard to the release of Paul from that prison as a result of a divinely orchestrated earthquake. He was stoned to death outside, I think, Lystra in Galatia. He went to heaven. His soul. That's what happens when believers die. He was resuscitated or resurrected. Now, that's the first word was the wrong word. For years I've misused that word. I probably lost a lot of people over it. Resurrected. I'm just kidding, okay? I've heard dumber stuff, but he was resurrected and brought back and fixed all up. So he was martyred twice. I just thought of that. I don't know anybody who's martyred twice. I know people died twice. Lazarus, Jesus' friend, because he went on after Jesus had raised him up from 3 days. After 3 days, it raised him up in front of a bunch of people. And of course, he went on and lived his life and died eventually. Verse 18 sets forth the disparity between the sufferings of phase 2 and the glory of ultimate sanctification. Ultimate sanctification is body, soul, spirit brought together from the rapture forward. That's ultimate sanctification. You will get your rewards package right after you get your resurrection body. That's only appropriate. You couldn't do anything with it here. And obviously, I'm at pretty much of a loss to describe to you. I can describe to you wonderful things on earth. You've got to try this bottle of champagne. I can describe some things. Material and experiences. But I can't describe the SG3 account. Silver, gold, and precious stones is just a way to illustrate 1 Corinthians 3, a believer stands before the Bema Seat. Their works, their deeds, not their sins. That's not an issue. Their works, what's a work? I raised a family. I was a mother. I was a father. I went to work. I did this. I did that. I built something. I helped take care of my parents when they're old age. I was there for them. Those are works. considered by the world to be noble and something people ought to do. But if they're done out of fellowship, they're dead works. God may be able to bless a guy in time. He can even bless an unbeliever in time. That's righteous. There's examples in the Bible. But for believers, the dead works, and I'll have a big pile of them. I'm sure I've done a lot of stuff I was supposed to do, and I wasn't in fellowship. Anything, any chore, any whatever you do, that's legitimate. Now, everything you and I do in fellowship, we're going to get a reward for it. We'll take an extreme of something that is extremely easy to do. Doesn't cost you hardly anything. Just all it costs you is you had the presence of mind to say, I need a glass of water. Or you volunteer it to someone. Here, you want a bottle of water? Jesus said, even if you give a glass of water in my name, which implies fellowship, there's a reward attached to it. How can anyone, somebody said, will I be able to identify applications I made with a reward up in phase 3? Don't ask me. I don't know. Because this is a deal that's hidden. The only SG3 thing I can sink my teeth into is a position of rulership during the 1,000 years. As in the parable, he gets authority over one city. Or this believer gets authority over 10 cities. Because there's a hierarchy of rule going up to Jesus Christ. The apostles, each one of them, are going to be rulers and supervise the 12 tribes of Israel. Each one of those ordinary, for the most part, all except Paul, all the disciples were just ordinary. One of them might have been a tax collector. One of them was a fisherman, blah, blah, blah. You know, ordinary stuff we'd see today, pretty ordinary. Paul was a little different. He was an up-and-coming Pharisee within the religious movement, was really a bright star in their deal. But that's about it. They're going to rule over the 12 tribes of Israel. And Israel will be in its ultimate glory during the time of the rule of Jesus Christ. So that would illustrate something. And Israel will be the premier nation on earth during the 1,000 years. Along with, unexpectedly, a nation that doesn't even exist today as a nation. Assyria. I don't mean Syria as Syria up north of Israel. I mean Assyria. The ancient kingdom of Assyria. The one that Jonah went to and evangelized. That Assyria. There are still Assyrians on the earth. Do you know that the Assyrians are considered today the Syrian Christians? Now, I don't know what their belief system is. I don't know if they've got the gospel straight. But they're called the Assyrian Christians. And they were the food tasters for Saddam Hussein. Because there's people that wanted to poison him. Oh, that's a job I want. What are you going to work to do today? I'm going to taste Saddam's food to be sure there's no poison in it. And he was real favorable towards those Christians. I don't know any other details. That's pretty phenomenal. And they're still in Iraq. And God's going to make a great nation out of them. There'll be a trinity of three great nations. And they all border up on each other more or less. Assyria, Israel's at the top. Assyria. And a nation that is really down in the basement in so many ways now. Was a great empire in the past. Egypt. Egypt. Those are the three premier nations. Doesn't mean these other nations out here are anything to, you know, disparage. Because nations will prosper during the reign of Jesus Christ like you can't even believe. There will be little or no crime. No mafias. No rigged banking system. That's when we really start going down the fast track to where we're at today. when we rubber-stamped the Federal Reserve System in 1913. And then they threw in the federal income tax with it. Tax your labor. There won't be any of that business. There'll be no nations going to war with each other. War will be prohibited. If two nations have a dispute, they take it to the tribunal of Jesus Christ and he resolves it. And you go home happy. None of this mess we've got today. It's going to be the rule of the rod of iron. There still will be STAs, and STAs will still act up. But if they commit capital offenses, they'll be executed. Everyone will know it. The millennium will start off with very few people, and they will go out from there and rebuild the nations that were devastated as a result of the seven-year tribulation. Disease, largely, will take a holiday. People won't have to worry about the things that are all around us today, the crazy lawlessness. People in nice neighborhoods in this country are scared. Like the better neighborhoods in L.A. Because these mobs are running around smashing windows and tearing stuff up. And the loser leaders that they have, mayor and that, they won't stop it. People are squatting on their properties and living on it, homeless. In these nice neighborhoods. Not that they have a right to do it in a neighborhood that's not so nice. But this is the point. The country is being given over to lawlessness. The police chief of New York City has made misdemeanors out of crimes that are very serious. What's that tell the criminal element out there? What's it tell people that are, you know, what I'll call born criminals? They're going to be a criminal anyway. That's just their grid. There's a verse in the Bible that says, born liars. They like to lie. Not a person that tells a lie in a moment of weakness so that they look good. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking psychopaths. People that like to lie. Acclimating to the temporal sufferings is a major key to our eternal glory, namely SG3. This is brought out in 1 Peter 4:13. But to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, keep on rejoicing, so at the revelation of his glory, you may rejoice with exultation. And finally, Hebrews 10:33, referring to these Hebrew Christians that received this letter back in their early Christian experience. They, partly by being made a public spectacle through reproaches, that's name-calling, and tribulations, and partly by becoming sharers with those who were so treated. All right, let's get where we need to be, and we'll fulfill another commandment, and that is to observe the Lord's table.